That's right, football. That's where we're at here on the Student of the Game. We talk about football. And, of course, the other man across from me here, in addition to Chris, we all know and love him, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, come on. We're going to get a little bit better something. It sounded like you had the one. It sounded like you're the one who's had the cold for the past month. Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Much better. Thank you very much. It was funny. We were testing the equipment as we just relocated the studio. And my wife stood in for you and did a pretty good yeah, boy. I thought you'd be proud of that.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, since that was a test recording, I don't have it. But I would play it for you if I could. Anyways, enough about that. You're here on the National Gridiron Network bringing you football talk. Just the way you like it here. And guys, last week we hit up a whole lot of awesome. Chris, I know you checked in towards the end. Weasel, you were here. You weighed in. But you nor I really got to talk very much because we were compelled to listen to Big TJ and Twan Staley last week, who both did a fantastic job talking up not only the NFL, talking about throwing a flag for the N-word for 15 yards, but with college players unionizing, it's a huge, huge guy, huge deal. The quarterback for Northwestern, the quick version, quarterback of Northwestern kind of trying to form a union amongst the Northwestern players, which would be the first and a whole bunch of dominoes that could lead towards college players actually unionizing. And last week, you know, Chris got to weigh in a little bit. But I wanted to come back a little bit here because there was something there that he said that really got me thinking, that really got my noodle baking, in that the players, if they were still allowed to pay tuition, if a scholarship wasn't offered, but they were given a stipend in lieu of a scholarship, could be a possible solution. Do you think that's something that would actually pacify the would-be unioners of the college ranks?
See, I'm after last week's show, I was like thinking about this too a little bit, and how, I mean, we went off subject about having like a, instead of college, just go to a like how what I brought up was soccer. They have all the divisions, all the, you know,
right,
the feeder leagues into there, which I'm thinking again, it's not going to work. We've tried it before all the years. You know, the UFL tried, it folded.
Right.
You know, the XFL folded. The, you know, all these other small little ones. Even the only thing that's really working is Canadian Football League and the NFL. That's it. I know they have smaller ones like Russia League has a league going, but NFL Europe is no more.
Yeah. Well, and there was the USFL that was going for a while. But I think that the part where these other leagues have failed is at some point they try to compete with the NFL. So that's where it all went wrong. None of them really tried to embrace being a feeder league, except for maybe the UFL and NFL Europe. I'm not even really counting NFL Europe at this point, because trying to enact an entire league of teams, I mean, the only relative success found with that was in Germany. I mean, they had, what was it, Cologne and Berlin. I think it was Frankfurt. I forget the other city. But there were like 3 to 5 teams in Germany attempted. And the only ones that showed any real success were that one and, were those, I should say, not that one. And I mean, the ones in France didn't do so hot. They even were looking at, the Sea Devils, I think, in Amsterdam, something like that. That didn't go so hot. And at the end of the day, they were really just kind of stuck, you know, having to fold that. And it would have worked for a feeder league. The UFL tried to do the same thing. I just don't think they got a good initial push, to make all that work anyway.
But I mean, if you look at it, really, college is a feeder league. I mean, that's where all the players have done. It's done it for years. Paying the players, I mean, it opens a lot of doors of if it's a set amount per player, then, you know, it might be able to work. Because you can't say, you know, it's not like opening up like how the recruiting is right now, that Alabama has like $100 million in, you know, recruiting budget. And then you get some of the smaller schools that have like 20. So, I mean, you're going to look at that. You know, the cap will have to be across the board, like a salary cap like the NFL has.
Right.
You have to have a cap. And then you play the players of, do you pay them the same? Do you pay them, you know, per position? This position makes this much? Or do you pay it by skill level? This guy's a, you know, a 5-star blue chip player out of high school. Do you pay him this much money and then like the 4-star you're signing gets this much less, or is it just straight across the board?
Well, that's the way I would answer that is they would have to also allow things like what Johnny Manziel did, right? Okay. Signing things for your likeness. If you could make money off of you, off the field, then you should be fine. But your play on the field, everyone should be the same. I think that's the part that keeps getting lost for these people who defend the players. The players need the college more than versus ISA. Because let's pretend that every single solitary college player in every sport were all able to actually unionize. All the hundreds of thousands of college athletes. By the way, all three of us know ain't going to happen, right? Let's pretend that that actually happens. At the end of the day, the college is still going to be fine being an institution of higher learning. The tail would stop wagging the dog, theoretically, in some of these instances. And Weasel, help me remember, what was the number we had for, it was like 70, no, the most liberal estimate was, what was it, 75 out of 225 collegiate programs in Division I.
I think that was about it.
Right, were profitable. I mean, that's the point you made, is the institutions, not all of them can genuinely afford it. So at the end of the day, you do that, who loses? These smaller schools, once again. It's already bad enough that they struggle to compete to be in the national championship, which slowly but surely I think we're going to lead toward that. And I know we don't have it on the agenda, but I think we should touch on a little bit of opinions on what they're doing with this committee and going towards the playoff system. Just because you're here, Chris, right. You know.
But real quick about with Northwestern, with the quarterback starting this, Northwestern, they're in the Big Ten,
right.
Or B1G, whatever you want to call it.
The not so Big Ten.
Right. They're in there. They're in the Big Ten. They unionize. They don't do it. The other schools don't. Big Ten's powerful enough. They're like, all right, we'll see you later.
Oh, they could just drop them.
They could just drop them straight from there. They're not. I mean, yeah, they've had the last year or two. They've had a decent team. It's been about 20 years since they've had a really good team before this. The last few years.
Well, yeah.
So they could, for how much money the Big Ten makes right now, they could drop them and sign another team in there, that whoever they want basically to come play to them. I mean, they brought in Nebraska, they brought in Rutgers, they brought in who else? Maryland. Maryland had to pay $50 million to get out of the ACC.
That's how desperate they were to do it. I still don't quite. Why do you want to leave the ACC right now? I don't understand that either necessarily either. Well, I can help. Because the competition in the ACC is improving, and no matter how bad the Big Ten is, you're going to get a lot of TV time.
Yeah, and then look at also with Maryland, how bad they've been in the last few years too.
Yeah, so. No, definitely. I mean, Weasel, let me take you here, because, I mean, we don't get a chance to hear much about your opinions on college ball. And we kind of gotten away from the unionization thing, which is fine. We talked about it last week. But where do you sit where it comes to all the movement you have in conferences and things like that? I mean, I know you're not necessarily studied up at the moment, but the direction that college football is taking is, yeah, a lot of these bigger conferences that are just, there's all sorts of motion and crap that I can't even keep track of, frankly. If I know we were going to this direction, I would have had former panelist Andrew Glukov, who now hosts his own show called The College Cram with John Doucette, following this one at 9 o'clock Eastern time this evening on the National Gridiron Network. Shameless plug. Wait, is it still a shameless plug if it's someone else's show?
Are you on it?
I am not.
Okay. No.
Okay, fair enough. Good question. Fair enough. See. It's not a shameless plug. It's just creative assistance, right? No, but, I mean, kind of your opinion of where college football is going. What is it that really captivates you or disgusts you about its direction right now?
Well, I kind of like for the bowl schedule, it's going to be a little bit different next year with they're going to have the 4-team playoff, which I really like. The BCS was something that, you know, it had its flaws, and the team that wins the national championship isn't necessarily the best. So I'd say that now the BCS is gone and you have a playoff, that's something good. And for this whole thing about paying the players and with unionizing and all that, it's like they get athletes get everything. They pay for everything the college does, like for like uniforms, travel, and they're there to get an education, but it's not like they're paying out of pocket to play the sport. So how things would change with that, I mean, with if they actually do get paid, I don't like it, but.
Right. And, I mean, we can touch on that, too. I think the best. Here's what it is. The negative, obviously, is who can afford it, right? The positive is I like the concept of other non-fiscal issues the college players can talk about, right? they can collectively bargain for things like, you know, hey, more testing and research and for lack of a better word, focus on worrying about concussions, that kind of thing. Or seeing to it that a college student isn't left to the devices of like a college medical center or something like that to get results, right? Because I've heard bad stories about how that goes for people, you know. Without getting into anecdotes, there's someone you and I both know who someone diagnosed that they just turned their ankle when really they broke something and now they're permanently damaged for it. You know, we certainly don't want that for a football player. Actually, for any athlete for that matter, you're giving up your body for the university, whether they're giving you an education or not. Your ability to, you know, live life isn't something that you should have to compromise. To that extent, I get that. They offer it because some of these cats, you know, you've heard some of these stories on like a Real Sports or on a Sports Illustrated article or something like that. They get hurt. Then their money from the scholarship is pulled. So now do they not have the prospect of being a professional athlete at some point? They can't even get an education necessary to get a job to support themselves after being hurt. And they can't, you know, they can't afford the college themselves. And then, well, everyone's like, well, there's always student loans. Those things follow you for life, man. You know, I know we all know someone who's in that situation. So, I mean, I don't know if any of us are in that situation ourselves. I mean, the three of us were lucky enough to get good academic scholarships, but that's a different topic. I don't know. So, it's interesting. I like that you brought up the playoff system, Weasel, because, Chris, I want to take that to you. They talk quite a bit about this committee that's going to be formed to basically evaluate. It's going to be the new polling system. And rather than, you know, coaches or things like that shaping the poll, as it were, now it's going to be committee members who include athletic directors, muckety-mucks, and the name you keep hearing dropped is Condoleezza Rice is going to be a member of this committee as well. And they're going to rank the teams, and that's what's going to form the playoff. At least as far as I know, that's how it's going to work. Thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, it's not going to work. You're going away from a college program that, you know, a computerized, they're like, oh, it's a computerized program. That's what the deal is. You're going with these people that are going to be biased in their own ways of, you're saying athletic directors of schools that are going to be in this conference. They're going to want their conference in the, you know, playoff. You know the SEC is going to have one or two athletic directors in there. And so they're going to, you're going to have these athletic directors that are going to be in there to do this. And then you're going to have Condoleezza Rice, who has probably no idea of who, let's just say, UCF is, or, you know, some of the other smaller schools, like maybe even TCU. Or, I mean, TCU's been around forever, but
Boise State,
or, you know, some of these other schools, Fresno, you know, Northern Illinois had a decent year until they lost that stupid game that they blew away.
Well, and they got to a bowl game where they lost to FSU, who won the national championship the next year. That kind of thing.
Right. So, I mean, it's not going to work. 14 playoff is like a slap in the face for a playoff schedule thing. Just either keep it how it is or you increase it to at least 8.
Okay, and that's where I wanted to go is, don't you think, and if you don't think this is how they did it, that's fine, don't you think they put the 14 playoff in place with the concept of expanding it in mind? Like it was going to be a stepping block?
No, because what you need to do is you need to go look at Division 1AA, Division 2, Division 3, or no, sorry, you don't call them those anymore, you know. Division 2, yeah, right. The FCS, the football championship.
Did I just say FBS?
Yes. It's the FCS, the Division 2, and Division 3. You look at them, they've been doing playoffs for years.
Sure.
They take, you know, they don't have 125 teams. I mean, it's been counting. I remember when it was less than 100. You know, Division One teams. I mean, it's just everybody's coming up to the 1A, the FBS division. You need to cut that out for one. There's so many freaking teams in there.
Yeah.
And just if you want to go to 14, then break it down and cut the teams down that are in Division One. Separate away from the one, go into a playoff league and go with a 64-team league or a, you know, a 72-team league.
So for those of you who aren't European or don't follow soccer, I guess what you're essentially saying is you want a Premier League.
Pretty much, yeah. Go 72. That's 18
See,
teams.
But too many people hate the SEC for us to do that. So that's right.
Right, but I mean, just break it down to all you do is break it down to like South, East, North, and West. Basically, you put 18 teams in each one. That gives you 72 teams. You break off those bottom 54 teams, 52 teams, however many teams that are in Division One that shouldn't be playing Division One A anyway.
Uh-huh.
Break them off, go have them go back to 1AA or whatever, and you just go that way. And then you take the winners. You take the 18, you break them up into nine in each division, and then the winners of those two divisions play each other. Winner of that goes into the four-team playoff.
And all that's good and well, but we're forgetting about the money of the conferences in that instance. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. If
you have the four conferences basically then, or you have eight conferences.
Yeah,
it'd be like the SEC versus the ACC in here, and then the winner of that one goes off of here to go.
You start at regional, and then it climbs to the top. But then again, I mean, not that that's bad, but the gripe would be, oh well, all the strong college programs are in the East and now West, you know. Which, hey, look. I know I used to be the host of the NFL West Recess where I was fighting against West Coast Bias one show at the time, but the truth of the matter is this. The PAC ain't that great a conference. They're not overrated right. like the Big Ten, but the truth is out West, no. They just don't have the same firepower. To this extent, I think you're right. A 14 playoff isn't enough.
Right.
That's true. They're going to expand. That's
right.
going to happen.
I've said before go 32. I mean, everyone was like, oh, that's way too much. But you know what? By the time the season ends, the first weekend of December, to where the national championship is, you can start with 32 and play a week in that January 7th, 6th, whatever the second week is. In January, that would be exactly, and you still have the bowl games.
Well, and it may work out chronologically, but I don't know, Weasel. If you're a college player and you're playing all through November and December, holidays be damned, I mean, isn't that too much to ask for of a quote-unquote amateur athlete?
I would say it's too much because whenever you have players that are going to be playing football, like when there's a big break or something,
sure,
what's going to happen is that that's kind of a lot of that time should be kind of family time,
mm-hmm.
and because it's separate from school, making one trip for a bowl game is like a couple of days where they miss it, but having the playoffs like week after week is gonna it'll wear down on them, so. I agree with Chris with the eight team concept because I think it would be only 3 weeks.
The eight team, yeah.
Well, eight divisions or eight teams? Eight teams. You're still going in with the four because you're still looking at who is the eight teams. You're having a committee decide on the eight teams.
Well, if so you go with the committee.
Huh? Well, even in general, it's just the whole ranking system. That's why I say go out to 32 because you get that's why March Madness is so great because you get those Cinderella story teams because they take the 68 teams now. But then you get that one team that gets hot and then there's people that they're 15 seed, they beat the number 2. You're not going to get that in the NFL. That's what everyone likes is the underdog story. You get these little teams.
That's true.
I mean, if you're going with the top 8 teams, 5 of the teams would be from the SEC. Because of how they rank them in the poll. So you're not going to get these other teams that are up here that, let's just take, we're all UCF fans, so that's what it is. They went in and beat Baylor. They were a 17-point underdog against Baylor, and they beat them by over 10.
Well,
so, I mean, you get this team like that because they got hot and they worked, and they had a play and they went with it. You're going to say UCF was ranked 15th. They beat Baylor, who was ranked, 6th, 5th at the time?
6th.
Yeah, right. They're ranked 6th. Baylor would be in the playoffs, but UCF wouldn't. UCF had the same record as Baylor and same as some of the other teams that are ahead of them.
But by the same token, the very system, okay, that had Louisville ranked ahead of UCF, okay, even though UCF freaking
That was coaches.
Okay, that's not the case anymore.
Right.
Okay, that's the hope that we'll have to be in the middle.
But you'll still have a committee that'll still rank their division with their aid with athletic directors.
Well, right, with the conference and all that in mind.
Right.
I'm not saying that won't happen. As a matter of fact, I've said this and ticked some people off, okay? The pick that I'm least concerned with being on that panel is Condoleezza Rice because she's not an AD. Sure, maybe she's, the former defense Secretary of Defense. Good job, Kyle. Former Secretary of Defense as I beat the hell out of my desk over here. But here's what I know. She went to an Ivy League school, right? Okay? The Ivy League is not going to see a championship, a national championship in college football anytime soon. I think the three of us can give me some nods if you agree, gentlemen. I'm seeing nods. Yeah. Okay. Hey, you remembered it was radio.
Yeah.
They're not going to get a national championship in football anytime soon. So as neutrality goes, truth matters, this Condoleezza Rice is the best choice. Now, the best defense I've heard is from a panelist who's both on the Sports Chronicles radio network and a member of the panel on the flagship show for the NGN that's on Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock. Brandon Pemberton, fantastic writer, by the way. Check him out on nationalgridironnetwork.com. Said that we should rely on the writers. But gotta be honest, gentlemen, who does that leave us? Kirk Herbstreit? Lou Holtz? Chris Fowler? The very same people that one day a lot of the public at large maligned for not doing the justice. And look, I'm sorry. If we're rating porn, I'll pick Brett Musburger with the way he, you know, ogled over McCarron's girlfriend in the national championship where they crushed Notre Dame. But picking the national championship? Not going to happen. I'm not feeling that. The whole reason we do this show, gentlemen, is because we believe the quote-unquote established writers aren't doing it exactly right. And I'm not saying that's true of all of them. There are some people who should be bestowed that right. That's true. But are writers the best choice? I mean, everybody's going to have their biases, okay? But in picking writers, is a writer going to watch every single solitary game out
there? No, it's like the same thing as the coaches.
You know, and that's what it is.
Yeah, they're going to write for whatever the conference they write for, and that's who they're going to vote for.
You know, and at the end of the day, finding somebody who's using it as a cushy job, like Condoleezza Rice, is probably the best bet. I mean, what else does she really need to do at this point in her career? She's not going to run for president. She's not going to do anything else that we know about. So she can devote the time to watch the games. You think an AD is going to watch all the games? Here, I'm going to tell you no.
No, because they're going to be at their games, their schools, they're watching right. Their school, and they're going to be voting for their conference.
And if they're not at their games, they're bad ADs. Straight real. I don't know. Weasel, am I spouting crap here? You with me? Yeah?
I got you.
Weasel, Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
The three of us agree that the playoff is the best move. But it's going to get fixed, gentlemen. And all I ask, you guys, or whoever's listening, is to not go ape when the four-team system fails. Because it's not the last stop. I mean, first of all, Chris, look, we've known each other damn near 3 decades. But I got to call out one thing. You mentioned the NCAA tournament, which in itself is a damn travesty, bringing in 65 teams. Yes, it's 65 because they have...
That's 68 now.
Oh,
yeah,
is it?
It's 68.
Oh, my God!
They have 4 playing games, one in each division. And then the playoff, which really retarded, is their playoff is they're playing against a 12th seed, not even a 16th seed.
Well, actually, honestly, that doesn't bother me too much. That doesn't bother me.
It does when you get upset and you're a 12th seed and you got other teams that you got 12 other teams that you were better than, and then you have to play a play-in game?
Play good enough to be a 10th seed, okay? Come on, man. At that point, I don't know.
I know 32 won't work. 16 would probably be the best.
Okay. I said it earlier on in the previous offseason when they were first talking about it. I think I had Drew as a guest panelist or something one week when you guys were off. I like 8 teams, okay? It's not too big. It's not something where you would literally need months to play all the necessary games to get through a 32-team tournament, right? And it's a big enough number to where you can throw this argument, okay? If you're not good enough to make the poll in the top 8 teams, do we really care about your national championship? And before you go to the UCF example, remember, we're getting rid of the stuff that, or allegedly, getting rid of the stuff that placed UCF at 15th behind a team they beat. If my statement is true that that's going away, which, hey, I know it may not be, I'll be honest, then we have a good idea. But what do you got?
It's still not going to happen because they're still going to go off of the other computer rankings are going to still be there. The BCS ranking will still be there. The AP ranking will be there. The coaches poll ranking, USA Today coaches poll will be there. The Harris poll, all these other polls are going to be there with all their rankings. to put in these people that are not going to be doing their homework, just looking at, oh, they have 1 through 8 there. I'm just going to go through that way.
So you're worried about the other polls influencing.
It will influence. And so that's why I don't think 8-team work. It's, you can't say, oh, because there are 8 teams. It depends on how you look at it. Because like I said before, 8 teams, 5 of them would be SEC.
There's one thing I'm going to sit back. First of all, let's not forget, I know this was a bad year comparatively for the SEC and that they didn't quite win the national championship because they cannibalized themselves. But is it really a bad thing that the SEC is in the top is 5 in the top 8? I'm just saying. A, B. In that instance, let me make sure I form this correctly. Well, let me go here. What if they put in this rule? You have to have won your conference. Okay? Now, of course, there'll be contingencies like, you know, if let's say we have a situation where, you know, 8 of the top 10 are SEC teams. At some point, if you want a garbage conference with a conference record, I don't know, a la the Packers this year in the NFL, right? The lowest you could possibly get above 500 for the record mathematically. Let's say you do that. Should you win? Should you be in a college playoff? That's a different question. Okay. That's something the NFL is still toiling with, where the Packers had a home game against the 49ers, who were fifth seeded because they're in the same division as the Seahawks. Okay. If you can't break the top 10, should you be in the playoffs? As a conference champion, mind you. At some point, you got to find the right mix. Weasel, you're making faces. What do you got, bro?
Well, I think about if there should be 8 teams, 16 teams, or 32 teams, I think it's easier for them to start at 4. And then,
so you like the building block concept.
Because they can build up to maybe 8 teams later, because I think what happened with the BCS and stuff, when it started out, I mean, no one really knew how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, I think they learned it to at least make a playoff now. But 8 teams, maybe that'll be enough. I don't know. But, yeah, there's all these things like should the conference winner go? Should this team, like you have a team that went 15-0, but they're like from a middle school. What do you do about the conferences like the MAC conference? And you got, well, not Conference USA, but you have these other conferences that aren't that strong. And so what should, just because they won their conference, should they get in the top 8? It's tough.
Which is the same kind of problem we have with the BSC, right? For a stretch there, it seemed like 5 or 6 years, maybe more, everyone keeps talking about, well, Boise State's undefeated in the Mountain West. Okay? You know, look, don't get me wrong. I love the blue field. I think that's the jam. But I don't mean you should make it to a national championship.
Right.
I mean, yeah, and okay, they won the bowl game in a game where Alabama didn't want to be there anyway. Okay? Let's be honest. I keep hearing about, oh, well, they upset. Oh, look what is it? Look what Louisville did against Florida. An SEC team is not trying hard in a bowl game that is not the national championship. You don't have to like it, but it's the truth. Because they're going into that game let down. Louisville has something to play for. They have to be like, oh my God, UCF freaking won their bowl game. We got to win ours. I chronologically, that probably didn't work out right because I'm sure Louisville played their game first. But you see what I'm getting at.
There are different conferences at that time.
Right. So,
UCF did win their bowl game before that, though. But yeah. there are different conferences at the time when that happened.
At any rate. But I mean, look, the point of the matter is this. It's a lot bigger deal. Right, because Louisville didn't get brought in yet.
The UCF didn't bring in.
What did I say? Oh, I said backwards. Right. Well, whatever. College football, my second language. That's why you're here, Chris. But I mean, look, the point is, it's the closest thing they're going to have to a Super Bowl. Heck, you would argue, and I would agree, that UCF themselves overachieved. So them beating Baylor is a huge deal to them. Granted, they may have been ranked lower than they should have been, but that's not the point. I don't know. Anyways, we're getting to the break. Let's take a quick one here. You're listening to the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join us as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game week by week till the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGN, football talk, just the way you like it.
And we are back here on the National Gridiron Network. I am Kyle Nash, a student of the game, and across from me, see, two for two, I'm trying to tell you, across from me, Chris Rankin doing his thing, taking a little time off, training to save the, make the world safer for democracy, to be an EMT slash firefighter. The goal is to be a firefighter, right? I keep getting confused with this. It's, you know, you only tell me all the time, and I can't ever get it straight, but you become an EMT, become a firefighter, right?
Right. In the state of Florida, you have to be their EMT firefighters. So it's the runs that run on all 911 calls.
So, okay. So that's, you know, that's the ladder. But he's doing that. And, of course, just being awesome as always, my dude. Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy.
I think I caught him off guard on that one. That's okay, though. Welcome back to the show, Weasel. Anyways, we did a little bit of the college talk. We got Chris's chance to weigh in. As fun as it would have been to have you last week, there is no way it would have contained you, Twan Staley, and Big T in 1 hour last week. So I'm glad we got you separate.
Too much awesomeness to handle.
I can't! Oh, it's too awesome! It's too sexy! Ah! No, yeah, you're exactly right, Weasel. Well done. But another bit of awesome, it looks very interesting to me, one receiver, Hakeem Nicks. Been a lot of talk of him relocating from his current squad. You see, I was about ready to get him confused with Hickson. Hickson's the one that left. But Nicks, after the great year the Giants had this past season, he's on the block. A lot of talk that he will relocate. And he said in a tweet recently that he would be, quote, dangerous with a quarterback like Andrew Luck. The same tweet also mentioned great interest in receiving passes from Cam Newton and Phillip Rivers as well. Gentlemen, first off, of the three, where is the best future of those three? For one, Hakeem Nicks, Weasel, let me start with you. Weasel!
I would say Decker, because even though...
that's not the question. Decker's not quarterback.
Oh, quarterback.
On the board, right there.
I'm looking at the board.
Yeah, and you're looking in the wrong place. We're at the first part. So, okay, you listening now? Okay, the second one's not on your ear.
Rewind it.
Put both pieces of the headphones on your ear. There you go. Okay.
Okay, so I think the best quarterback for Knicks would be, I'd say, Andrew Luck, because they have an aging... Reggie Wayne,
uh-huh.
And he's getting up there, and I think he wants to. I think he wants to retire, so it would be a good fit for him. So
I don't know that he wants to retire.
Well,
so much as I think age is going to compel him to. But I see where you're going. You know, and of course that's a great thought too. Andrew Luck. I mean, let's be honest. It's not that he has a bad receiver. Yeah, he does. He has a bad receiver core. Without Reggie Wayne, he has a bad receiver. Darius Haywood Bay was your next best option on the playing chart for a while. No, lame. Darius Haywood, lame. Okay, that's what that is. All right. Yeah, I didn't like that one so much either. Yeah, thank you, Weasel. I appreciate your fair and balanced judgment now that you're listening. Anyways, Chris.
Yeah, I would say Andrew Luck would be the best fit there, because not just Reggie Wayne. I mean, look who else. Reggie, they need a possession receiver. Yeah, they got their tight ends. They got Kobe Fleener and can't think of the other tight end's name. Came from Clemson for the Colts.
Well, he's not their starter, and he's certainly not a big name.
He's the second string. No, he's. I mean, they run the ace formation there all the time. So
right, more than they should. That's right. Part of the problem.
So I mean, with him there, with Reggie Wayne's not a possession receiver really. I mean, he's starting to become a possession receiver now because he's with his age, because you know he's lost a step or two. But, I mean, you got that downfield threat with T.Y. Hilton. The downfield threat also with Brazil. They don't have a possession receiver. They got possession tight ends, not possession receivers.
Yeah.
So that would be the best fit. Cam Newton, I don't see him too much there. Yeah. That's where Dominic Hickson went. They don't have a possession receiver there also, but I think Nick's more style is Andrew Luck, and then Phillip Rivers, I don't think he fits in with the receiver core that's there.
Well, okay. It's very interesting that you rule out Phillip Rivers so quickly. In addition to the completely weak and totally awful division, they were one of the few teams in the out west that put fear into the hearts of the Denver Broncos. I think that's worth mentioning. Okay. Their running game, granted, it relied on the fact that Ryan Matthews, for the first time in a long time, actually played a full season. And when he got hurt in the playoffs was when the Chargers were impacted. Look, we all know I'm not a fan of Philip the Fraud Rivers, who had basically, I'm not going to say a career year, but certainly a comeback player of the year career. That's why I picked him at that spot in 2013. Across from the rookie Keenan Allen, okay, you got Antonio Gates as well. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they have a great receiver core. Between that and then a little bit of support from Eddie Royal, provided that they hold on to him and all that other happy stuff, is it bad being out west in the AFC West? It's a really easy ride to the playoffs.
Yeah,
and
but
we were this close to having no, or did we? We had three AFC West playoff teams last year.
Yes.
So if you're trying to get to the promised land, might be a good stop. However, I'm more compelled with the Panthers. Look, you guys are both right. The best quarterback on the list is Andrew Luck. The best situation, I believe, is the Carolina Panthers. If the Panthers actually fail in shopping Steve Smith and they keep him. They've been talking about shopping Steve Smith. I could understand why. The dude's 117 years old. I get it. Okay? But let's put that together. He's with his former teammate, Dominic Hickson. Okay? Steve Smith. Greg Olsen has done a fantastic job at tight end, and they got Hakeem Nicks as well. All of a sudden, that's a badass core, and Brandon LaFell isn't your next best freaking option, okay? By the way, running, they got it. Defense, they damn sure got it, okay? If I'm looking to get a ring, and solely that, I don't know. I don't see how you look past Cam Newton and the Panthers on that if you're Hakeem Nicks. I don't know.
Because you still have to go through Seattle and San Francisco in the NFC.
Well, okay.
You still have that. You got Lovie Smith now coming into the Bucs. That defense is going to be revamped. So you have a strong.
It's still going to be garbage, though.
Yeah, but you still got a strong defense that you got to go against. With the Chargers going over there, I mean, yeah, you got the Oakland Raiders. You know, that's a cakewalk there, but Denver secondary, once they get their front seven back, their secondary will be a little better. That's what they're going to concentrate on this offseason, I believe, the Broncos. But then you got Kansas City, who's got one of the best secondary
in the league. It's not their secondary, it's their front.
Right.
Pro Bowlers and Dontari Poe, Justin Houston, Tom Bahali. I'm missing one. Derek Johnson, there we go.
Yeah, but then you also got Eric Berry out there in safety. So,
right.
I mean.
But
their whole defense is pretty stacked there. I mean,
yeah,
I can see maybe the Panthers is a second option. I don't see the Chargers at all because
their defense is bad. Let's just call it
right.
What it is. But then that's true of the Colts as well. I mean, if I'll put it this way, of the two AFC teams on the board, okay, I know why, and I should have thought of this. You're picking the Colts
AFC
because
South.
The South is garbage.
Yep,
I can't front on that. That's a yeah. You got me. I still pick the Panthers.
Because the NFC South is garbage right now. That's what once you said. I'm thinking, I'm like, all right, get the Bucs, their defense going up there. But really, the Saints secondary is not all that great.
The
and
Saints
then,
front is
right.
not that great on
and
defense.
Then, well, actually, their front seven actually was pretty good this year. They led early in the year. They led the league in sacks.
Quinn Jordan's great.
Right.
Okay. But they're losing Will Smith. Their linebacker court has already made some releases. They're not what they were
right.
in 2015.
And then,
granted, the draft is coming, and this could all be null and void later on.
Right, and the Falcons weren't what they were in 2011 either. So
the Falcons are tricky because injuries. Let's be real. I mean, they're asking. First of all, is anyone else shocked that the Falcons are asking for Uzi Umunyora to take a pay cut?
Nope.
Come on, the dude. I'm not making Umunyora a sympathetic character because he shouldn't be one. But he leaves the Giants because they keep wanting to cut a salary. And then he gets to Atlanta and they want to cut a salary. I mean, damn, dude. Anyways, first world problems when you're talking about the life of an NFLer, I'm sure. But you can't help but notice a little bit of how they say the irony in this. I don't know. Anyways. So, in talking about Hakeem Nicks, there are three receivers that stand out in my mind. And I'm sure there are more. And if you want to add any into this mix, as I add this question, go ahead and call in 323-417-6711. But there are three receivers who are making waves in free agency. Should they be paid? Where are they going to go? All this other stuff. And, of course, we mentioned Hakeem Nicks. Then there's Denver's Eric Decker. Then, of course, the Patriots' Julian Edelman. Three very compelling thoughts at free agent wide receiver. Chris, let me start with you. Who you got?
For a team or for any of the...
Well, actually, I was going to say, which one of the three would you want for your team? But if you have some fits as well for any
of the guys. No, I'm just... For my team, I would... See, that's tough. I'd rule Edelman out because of the injury-prone thing. Decker, yeah, he's had a good year. He had a good year before. He's had a couple good years. Nick's the last couple years has been... He's been injury-prone as well the last couple years. So, I mean, going off of that, with Nick's healthy, I'd pick Nick's. But since the last 2 years with his injury, with his foot and his ankle, he's had, you know, over and over again, those issues, I would go with Decker would be the best fit.
Weasel?
Well, when you have the three of them, Decker, I mean, he did great with Peyton Manning, and it's not tough to do that. And he was pretty consistent with the past 3 years. I mean, he had 612 yards in 2011 with Debo, and then 2012 and 13, he's up over 1,000. Now, I think he would be the best one, but because Edelman, pretty much this was his first year where, you know, he actually had decent stats because he didn't get the ball as much because, of course, there's Welker and stuff. Mm-hmm. But his only good year was last year, and you have this guy named Tom Brady that's been thrown to him. So
who's that?
But as for Nick's, I think he would be the biggest risk-reward one because of his injuries. Mm-hmm. But I heard that he is – well, at first I heard that he wants Mike Wallace money, where it's like – I think it was like 6 year, like, you know, ton of money, like over $9-10 million. But I've been reading that he wants to get a one-year deal. And for a one-year deal, most likely they'll get paid $3 million or $4 million a year for the year. And one guy that benefited from signing a one-year contract was Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett, last year, he could have gotten an extension, but he went for a one-year, $3 million contract. It's tough because if you get injured or anything like that, you're out the next season.
Absolutely.
Nick's, he's got to stay healthy, and a team wants to see that. So one-year contract for him. So Decker is the safe one. But Nick's would be, I think, more. He has more potential, and
I called it back in week six with the Giants. Should have traded Nick's at the time and got something out of it, because you knew he was going to be leaving. Uh-huh. And you know they knew the Giants weren't going to sign. They're hit with the salary cap anyway. I mean, you had Victor Cruz. You have Jernigan.
Reuben Randall.
Yeah, Reuben Randall and Jernigan. So, I mean, you got the receivers there.
Do you feel like, Brandon Myers is not the tight end he should have been. That kind of disappointed me. I didn't think they were very smart to get rid of Martellus Bennett either, the Giants. But, you know, that offense was a comedy of errors last year. No offense, dude.
Right.
Yeah, let's not bring that up, please.
Yeah. So, I mean they had the receivers there. They should have dealt them back then, because there was teams that would have taken them then. And then, you know, I mean, it's a risk-reward. If he does great for you this year, you can re-sign him. If not, you know, you got him off your books then after the end of the year. And so, I mean, Giants turn around, don't get anything for him. Edelman, I thought he still has a contract, because I thought he signed a four-year deal with the or a three-year deal with the Pats.
I'll check his contract while I'm looking here. But there's talk about him relocating and wanting an extension and all that other kind of happy stuff. And, you know, if you mention anything about that,
with the Pats, you're gone.
Yeah,
so
you got it. So, I mean, it might as well be all the same, too. But I like that Edelman is leveraging. I mean, look, you know, I'm almost getting to be cliched, bringing up the business of sports like I do. But Weasel, you mentioned Edelman's performance, right? He's trying to, like last year, who all they were missing is what? The tight end situation, which we don't necessarily want to bring up Hernandez by name, but that is what it is, right? Aaron Hernandez gets busted for alleged murder, right? Then Gronk gets hurt, which, look, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but frankly, I'll be straight up with you guys. An NFL without Rob Gronkowski, regardless of the fact that he's a Patriot, is a lesser NFL. I like watching Gronk not only outrunning cats, but beating the ever-loving hell out of them. And some plays, doing both at the same time. Being a football renaissance man that could be both graceful and... See, but I'm here gushing on frickin' Gronk over here. According to what I have here, I think he is a free agent this year, Chris, by the way, Edelman. So then they shipped Welker. They expected all the other weapons to work out, including Edelman, and of course they got Denny Amendola. They figure, hey, we got Gronk, we got Amendola, Edelman will help, it'll be fine. Amendola inevitably gets hurt for stints throughout the season again.
Concussions.
Right. Gronk, out. Hey, at least Amendola didn't do it to his collarbone this time, right. Okay? And Gronk gets knocked out, again, because I think they brought him back too early the first time and just are trying to ask him to do entirely too much. The dude just has not really had an opportunity to rest his body entirely. It is what it is. But then you got like guys like... I can't remember all the names, as a matter of fact, but these other receivers that they're relying on who are dropping balls and doing a bad job all the way around, and they're still sneaking by and getting wins. No, not just because of the running game, although LeGarrette Blount did his part to help smoke defense, as did Stevon Ridley, as did Shane Vereen, yada, 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 yada. But Julian Edelman was indeed the only receiving threat and served well. Upside, he's got it. And Eric Decker, I'll tell you what. Eric Decker is not somebody you can look at his film and give me a definitive answer on. Gentlemen, name the quarterbacks for which Eric Decker has played.
Tebow.
Correct, Tim Tebow, Weasel, and who's the other one? This isn't tough. Just this past year.
Peyton Manning.
Very good. So we have him playing with an absolute garbage quarterback, allegedly, or an absolute great quarterback. Okay? You can't make an assessment with those extremes of what he'll do anywhere else unless he's playing with a Tom Brady, which would be hilarious, by the way, if the Patriots pull a coup d'etat and take a receiver back from the team that took Welker from him. I don't know. Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, no, I was just saying with Decker, with the year, you said it was 600-something stats for the Broncos with Tebow. You got to remember, he got injured there right before the playoffs.
Yeah.
Too. So, I mean, they didn't even have him in the playoffs. That's when Demaryius Thomas came on when he stiff-armed Ike Taylor on that one.
That was a good pass by Tebow. So, right. Quarterback or
not. Right. So, I mean, that's when Demaryius Thomas came on the play. They're like, well, who's this guy, you know? But it was Eric Decker that was coming up with all the catches.
Excuse
originally
me,
before
the
that.
Three of us identified Demaryius Thomas as a good player before that game.
Right.
I'm just saying. Man.
So, I mean, you can see that. We said Tebow, yeah, he has some awful throws, but when he is on, he's on.
It's funny. He'll I've seen him throw one in the dirt, and in the very, like, I was watching his game against the Bears where Matt Prater bailed him out with that long, two long field goals in the game, one to put in it overtime, one to win it. Some of those passes that Tebow threw were literally perfect. And some, he threw
and some are 20 yards out of bounds when the guy's on the hash mark.
I think what you got to do is you got to play Tebow for the first three and a half quarters. last 7 minutes of the game, put in Tebow. Golden.
Yeah, get that Tebow time, that four-quarter thing. Right on, I got you. there is no more Tebow time. The guy reserved for fourth quarter plays now is Andrew Luck. Mr. Comeback Commander, I'm just saying. Do I have to play the song for you again? I'm just saying. I don't know. You guys are saying that Nix is a question mark. To me, Decker is one. Yeah, he'll be decent for you. Yeah, he'll produce some. I'm not saying he's a bad receiver. I don't know that I put him in the top 10, honestly. I mean, would either you guys... I put Anquan
20 maybe.
No, he wouldn't be in the top 10.
I'd say
no.
20, top 20.
Matter of fact, due to his upside, I'll say this right now, and Weasel will probably smile a little bit. I'd take Cordero Patterson ahead of him today. Because even if Cordero Patterson is a raw receiver, he can do something for me in special teams. You know.
So would you put Golden Tate ahead of him?
No.
He can do something for you in special teams?
Stop it. No, it's a bank.
I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, he'll do something for special teams with punt returns.
Percy Golden Harvin Tate would be a tougher choice, honestly, at this point. But, no, Golden Tate is no.
Because he's on the free agent market, too, by the way.
That's very nice. I hope that goes well for him and he ends up in Jacksonville. I don't know. That's just an excuse for me to do this. You guys
thought he was heading south to San Fran.
Oh, yeah, no, at the end of the day. Anyways.
Yeah, he'll real fit in right there in San Fran with the name Golden.
Wow. Golden Gate Bridge is what you meant, right?
Sure.
Anyways, so with all that in mind, let's go ahead and jump over. We've been talking about receivers so long. That was fun.
Yeah. But, we're talking about Seahawks right there.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, transition win. Boom. We're going right over then. You got to talk a little bit about, I keep wanting to call him Michael Bennett because that's his name, but now you got me confused by talking about him as a running back, Weasel.
Yeah.
But defensive end Michael Bennett extends his contract with the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. And what is it? 4 years, $28.5 million, $10 million this year, you said?
$10 million in 2014 and $16 million guaranteed.
Okay. That's lucrative.
I mean, that's a guy that he took a flyer on going 1 year. 1 year, $3 million. And he did good. They won the Super Bowl, and then he got paid.
Pop quiz. Better investment in the future. Joe Flacco's contract or Michael Bennett's contract? Weasel. Chris.
For McDonald's, is Joe Flacco's contract?
I've never seen a goofier man eating chicken wings on TV. I'm just saying. Oh, my gosh. Now, you know, it's ironic that the Ravens lost a bunch of defensive players, good defensive players, due to that. And with this one, there'll still be a bunch of good defensive players. Here's the concern I have for this contract of Michael Bennett. At some point, the following guys will need to be paid. And I believe it's the end of this coming season. Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, Kevin Chancellor. I think there's a fourth one, but I forget who it is. That's a tough pill to swallow.
One thing about the Seahawks, though, is that they have all these players that were picked in. Like, I think it's like the fifth round towards the end, where they draft late, they get some good pickups, and like Richard Seymour, I think he was like a fifth round pick or so.
You don't mean Richard Seymour, you mean Richard Sherman.
Yeah, that guy.
The 90s called.
I got the Richard right. So,
you're racist, Weasel.
No comment. But anyways. So the thing with you lost my train of thought.
Oh, my bad. The thing with Richard Sherman's contract.
Oh, I'll just say that if they get rid of these players, the ones that you know are going to make the huge amounts of money, they're strong enough right now in the draft, based on the past couple years, that they can find some diamonds in the rough. So. Some teams, they just don't want to, you know, pay you the ridiculous money. But I think Seattle's got a good eye for the late round draft picks, too. Hmm. So and then those guys will get paid later if they produce.
So what you've just asked them to do is come up with two gems like that again in another draft. I mean, I don't know. What if those players don't exist? Moreover, between Cliff Avril, okay, Chris Clements, okay, and now, Michael Bennett, what was his cap number for this year again? $10
million? $10 million.
So, by my count here, looking at what I'm looking at here on sporttrack.com, that is $14.5 million in defensive ends in the coming year for the Seattle Seahawks. That can't hold.
Yeah.
That can't hold. And as much as it disgusts me, despite my 49er fanhood, Colin Kaepernick is asking for $18.20 right now, allegedly. Okay. Yeah. No, by the way, for those asking, no, you don't pay him $18 or $20 million. Are you high? He's done a lot. He ain't done that much for me yet. You want to give him 12 or 15? I'm down. Okay. No, because the Niners are still a defensive team first. You know, pop quiz. Michael Vick in San Francisco. Good idea, bad idea, Weasel.
I think Michael Vick, he could still play as a starter. So I think he's going to go to a team that, you know, their quarterback situation is like a mess.
If they opt to do it instead of paying Kaepernick $18 to $20 million. Technically, Kaepernick is still under contract, but this is a completely hypothetical universe.
I would say not for Michael Vick, no.
Hmm, interesting. Chris?
Yeah, I'd say no.
Screw you guys. I think it'd be awesome. Anyway. Okay, fine. So now I'm the minority in the room. No, not the way you're thinking, Weasel. Anyway, I didn't say anything. No, but so Let me put this forward to you. We mentioned, and we got 4 minutes left in the show, so this is going to be a quick one. We mentioned Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett, and Chris Clemens being where they are in their contracts for the Seahawks. This year, Clemens will get paid $7.5 million. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that's a lot for a defensive end, but yeah, it is. Who am I fooling? Both Clemens and Avril's contracts end in the coming year. Trading one of them makes sense while you could still get something for them. Somebody may want to swallow that cap number, perhaps like a Raiders who are currently $74 million under the cap, but then who do the Raiders have to give in return? That's the other question.
Draft picks.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. Could they give the Seahawks an opportunity to use the draft magic? I don't know. But true or false, best move for the Seahawks is to trade Clemens or Avril for Steve Smith of the Panthers. Chris?
I wouldn't say it'd be a best move, but the trade for maybe another receiver, maybe, yeah. But for the Panthers, I don't think the Panthers would go for that because they're pretty good on the front seven.
Dang it, that was going to be my psych-out answer at the end of you guys. Chris, or Weasel, rather.
I agree with him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The Panthers wouldn't take that. I agree with you 100%. And, of course, that'll bring us to the end of the show, gentlemen. You've, of course, been listening to The Student of the Game. Could always check us out, www.thestudentofthegame.com. Of course, we are on the National Gridiron Network, www.nationalgridironnetwork.com. Whole lot of awesome writing going on. Still got some season reviews coming up there from Twan Staley, who we had last week on. A lot of great stuff from him. Check out, of course, the sports guy himself, Daniel Trainwick. Chris, you may want to look at that. He says that with a few deft moves in the offseason, the Giants can be competitors again. So perhaps you can keep your head high. And keep in mind, that is coming from the perspective of an Eagles fan, so that makes it somewhat legit, Chris. I'm just saying.
I don't trust any Eagles fan.
Oh boy, he doesn't trust Big TJ either. Wow, that's rough. I don't know. And of course, also written by our own Teron Davenport, some corners the Vikings should consider picking up, so you may want to check that one out yourself, Weasel. Of course, you can tweet us what you thought we were right, wrong, or just plain crazy about on Twitter at the SOTG. And a whole lot of fun times there. And, of course, all of those writers that I mentioned, you can also check out on ProPlayerInsiders.com. A lot of greatness there. Certainly a lot more additional to what we have on National Gridiron Network combine coverage there as well. Awesome checks all the way around. Of course, immediately following this show, you have the College Cram at 9 p.m. with Drew Glucove and John Doucette. Gentlemen, I say this with complete legitimacy, not just as a plug. They're trying to talk all college sports. And they even talked about college hockey last week.
Sweet.
It was awesome. I'm like, you know what? I had fun with it. College hockey. I never cared so much about northern schools in my life, but it worked. I don't know. What can I say? Anyways, that's your lesson for today. Listen to the College Cram. Until next time, everyone, class dismissed.